Show Me Where My Armor Ends by Queenie of Aces, read by Hananabira. Yuri has his first panic attack when he's 13. He can't even remember what set him off in hindsight. Maybe it was falling one too many times in practice, or maybe it was the less-than-stellar grade on his English quiz, or maybe it was some mundane inconvenience he has since forgotten. The twisting, wriggling mass of anxiety that seems to dwell perpetually in his gut. That ball of directionless energy that expands and contracts depending on the day and his mood and the phase of the moon. That noxious mess grows too large for his body to contain. It fills his lungs and squeezes his heart, and he can't breathe, can't think, or maybe can't stop thinking. The same nonsense phrase repeating over and over in his head without beginning or end, without space for anything else, until it burns itself out and leaves him hollow and wrung out. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I am not... Yuri doesn't tell anyone. He doesn't want anyone to know about the way his brain backfires sometimes. They'll think he's weak. They'll know he's weak. They might know anyway. Mari always seems to have a distraction when things start getting bad, and Yuko drags him onto the ice to skate Victor's programs when his breath starts coming too short and fast. He lets the swirling mass stay in his gut, pushes it down, and ignores it as best he can. Most days it's small enough to ignore, an irritation rather than an insurmountable hurdle. On the rare occasions when it spills over, when it drowns him and leaves him shaking and drained, he picks himself up and keeps going. The least he can do is make sure no one else has to clean up after him. Learning a second language is like learning to skate, Yuri thinks. He's no genius, no Viktor Nikiforov or hyper-polyglot, has little to no natural talent. His legs give out and he pops his jumps. His tongue betrays him on R's and L's, defiantly curling into the wrong shapes. But what Yuri lacks in talent, he makes up in determination. Yuri pushes his body to obey, drills again and again until he can launch himself dizzyingly high, until his tongue unsticks itself from the roof of his mouth. His mind is weak, but he can control his body, can make it strong and push it past its limits. If he pushes himself too close to the breaking point, if he practices until his body is sore and his head is empty, well, it's easier to ignore things when he's too tired to think. "Your English is so good," his mother praises him, but he can hear every mistake the moment it leaves his mouth, can hear his accent pulling his words in the wrong direction. "Your skating is so good," she says, equally proud, but he can feel his insufficiencies, every wobble and tilt, every underextension and over-rotation, each of the tiny ways his body rebels against him. Yuri has a language partner in Detroit, an American student studying Japanese who constantly laments having to memorize whole separate sets of vocabulary to denote respect and humility. Yuri nods along, but he can't sympathize at all. Maybe it's because he's a native speaker, or maybe it's because his family runs the N, but Keigo has never been particularly difficult for him. Besides, it's not as though English doesn't have different registers, he thinks, as his language partner bemoans conjugations for what feels like the 50th time. Switching between iku, mairu, and irasharu is second nature to him. But what about yes, ya, and yep? What about the differences between are you going to the party tonight, and you gonna go to the party tonight, and you're going to the party tonight, right? Yuri can understand the basic meaning, can express himself relatively proficiently, but he misses subtle nuance in English, doesn't intuitively understand the subtext conveyed by certain word choices, certain sentence structures, emphasizing one word or de-emphasizing another. Yuri understands relationality in Japanese, understands intuitively what it means to be Yuri-kun versus Katsuki-senshu. He understands the slow transition from formal to informal speech among friends, how to change his wording depending on his audience, how to gauge his relation to others through the language they use. But he feels constantly wrong-footed in English, like he's missing the punchline while everyone else laughs. He's always too formal and not formal enough, too distant or too familiar, always awkward, always unsure, always accented and off rhythm and foreign. Why do you need a more formal word for tomorrow? Yudi's language partner grouses. And Yudi doesn't know what to say, what excuses and apologies to make for his native tongue. Yudi has built up barriers over the years, found ways to create buffers between him and the rest of the world. The first time he realized that he could keep his earbuds in, turn up the music, and use it to drown out everything around him, the swirling mass of anxiety softened at the edges instead of digging into his ribcage at every stray sound. Yudi uses words as another buffer, draws a circle around himself, and constructs a nearly impassable barrier of politeness. He is polite with the press, polite with his fans, polite with his coach, but it's a distant sort of politeness, a wall of glass that signals, keep out. He sees Viktor Nikiforov flirt and wink, his ease with press and fans and fellow competitors alike, and Yudi wishes he could be like that he had Viktor's self-confidence and self-assurance. But if people get close, they'll realize how weak he is. So Yudi builds up armor to protect his soft underbelly, doesn't let anyone draw near enough to see the gaps. But then there's Petit. Yudi has never made friends easily. He's too awkward and shy and socially inept, he knows, to win people over. But Petit is a social butterfly, pulls people to him and utterly charms them. Petit straddles the circle Yudi has drawn around himself and beams, brighter than the sun, more inexorable than gravity. Yudi gets along with Petit, not just because Petit is fundamentally likable. He is God. Hating Petit would be like hating puppies. Physically possible, but profoundly unlikely. But because, underneath superficial differences, they're surprisingly compatible. Petit is a natural performer, but he still works as hard as Yudi both on the ice and off, approaches every element of his program with determination. Teach me how to do a step sequence as well as you, Petit requests, eyes shining, and Yudi stammers out modest excuses, but winds up practicing beside him, offering a stuttering critique when Petit asks. Tell me how to improve my accent, Petit requests, grinning widely. And Yudi demurs again, pointing out how bad his own accent is and how far from fluency he is. But Petit is unstoppable. Petit is undeniable. Petit somehow ropes Yudi into watching The King and the Skater with him as English practice. Petit recites his favorite lines of dialogue in perfect synchrony with the actors, hums along with every song, and Yudi momentarily forgets his own self-consciousness, forgets to check and double-check his every word and catalog his every insufficiency. This is my friend Yudi, Petit says when he introduces him, and Yudi wonders if friend is a broader concept in English than Japanese, if friend has a less intimate connotation. This is my rinkmate, Petit, Yudi says when he introduces him. And he feels his insides knotting up with a worry that he's insulting Petit somehow. But Petit just smiles bright and easy and says, that's me. You sound different in Japanese, Petit declares, flopped on his bed as he scrolls through his Instagram feed. They're studying together, ostensibly. In actuality, there has been very little studying, but quite a lot of messing about on the internet. Do I? Yudi asks distractedly, squinting at his computer screen. Petit gave him a playlist the other day. Think of it as a mixtape, but there's no tape. A mix file folder. And now Yudi's trying to figure out how it's arranged, or even if there's any connection between the tracks. It's profoundly eclectic. 1930s big band, Bollywood, American hip-hop, Thai pop, and a file titled crickets.mp3, which, true to its name, is a 12-minute recording of crickets chirping. But still somehow works as a whole. He almost wants to ask Petit, but that feels like a cop-out. Petit confirms, lowering his phone. Or, well, you have your regular Japanese voice and your interview voice. I guess I hadn't noticed. Yudi never watches his interviews, can't stand hearing his voice on recordings, wavering and anxious and grating. It's worse hearing himself speaking in English, every mistake and mispronunciation laid bare and transmitted to the world. Thinking about it is enough to make the ball of anxiety expand outward against his ribcage, his heartbeat spiking and breath short. Perhaps Pachit knows what's going through his head. He can be perceptive, maybe too perceptive at times, because he sits up suddenly. Your interview voice is like... His shoulders suddenly tighten, expression flat and distant, voice rocketing upward. I'd like to present a program worthy of your support this year. And your normal voice is like, he sprawls out, voice dropping artificially low. I love dogs. They're so cute. I can't even believe it. Yuri can't stop the giggles that come bubbling up. I don't sound like that. You do, Pachit insists, obviously pleased with himself. And then your English voice sounds like. His next words are slow and careful, voice higher again. Pachit, we should watch The King and the Skater again. It's my favorite movie. Yuri doesn't even try to suppress his laughter this time. I know I don't sound like that. But you could, Pachit insists. And then he breaks down in delighted laughter as well. Oh, do I sound different in Thai? Yuri considers. I don't think so. Pachit is so bright and excited, regardless of the language he's speaking, is sunshine and charisma incarnate. He says his English isn't as good as Yuri's, but he has an ease about him, a self-confidence that Yuri desperately wishes he could replicate. Yuri freezes and second-guesses and rehearses conversations in his head a dozen times before he works up the courage to initiate them. And even then, half the time, when he's finally ready to speak, the moment has been lost. In contrast, Pachit laughs off his own mistakes, turns mispronunciations into inside jokes, and tweets them to the world. But maybe there's some subtle difference Yuri has missed. It's not as though he's paid attention to Pachit's interviews, and he tries to give him privacy when he calls home. Sorry, I'm not sure. Well, you'll just have to take notes next time. Pachit declares, and Yuri agrees without protest. As usual, Yuri can't point to something specific that sets him off. Practice is exhausting, but it has always been exhausting, and school is no more stressful than it ever is. But something sends him tipping over the edge, and he barely makes it to the locker room before he crumples, heart racing, and hand shaking, and vision blurring at the edges. He can't breathe, can't move, but has to move, has to find some sort of outlet for the uncontrollable swell of energy that fills him. Stupid, 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 stupid. Yuri? Pachit's voice calls. And Yuri tries to choke out some platitude, a simple, I'm fine, no need to worry. But he reaches for words and finds nothing there but buzzing blankness that winds its way around his windpipe. Yuri? Pachit's voice is closer now, and his feet come into Yuri's view, but Yuri can't bring himself to look up, dread weighing his hand down. Yuri, are you okay? He sounds worried, and that just amps Yuri's anxiety up further, hand scrubbing across his knee in a repetitive motion to try to release the nervous energy that's roaring through him. Should I get Chow Chow? No, Yuri manages to force out, eyes squeezed shut. The last thing he wants is Celestino to see him like this. The last thing he wants is for anyone to see him like this. But it's already too late, too late, too late. Do you want me to leave? Pachit asks hesitantly. And Yuri doesn't know. He doesn't know. He doesn't want to think anymore. You're so pathetic, God. You're pathetic. You can't even figure out what you want. Pathetic, pathetic, pathetic. He's dimly aware of Pachit sitting down beside him, leaving enough space between them that he doesn't feel crowded. He can hear Pachit speaking, but everything is too much and too loud, and he can't process anything, can't do anything but get air into his lungs and try not to shake apart on the locker room floor. When the last of the nervous energy has drained out of him, Yuri finally manages to look up. Pachit is still sitting beside him, telling some rambling story about Leo as though his life depends on it. He looks scared, hands clenched into fists in his lap and shoulders tight. And Yuri hates that. Hates how unnatural the expression looks on his face. Hates that he's responsible. "I'm okay," Yuri says quietly, his voice only cracking a little. "Okay," Pichit says, and some of the tension eases out of his shoulders. "Sorry, I panicked and didn't know what to do, but I thought I remembered reading something about panic attacks and not leaving people alone. I think I read that somewhere. And talking to keep people grounded, but then I couldn't think of what to say, so I..." "It's okay," Yuri interrupts him, squeezing his eyes shut again. "Sorry." He just wants to drop through the floor, have the ceiling collapse. Anything to get Pichit to stop looking at him like that. Like somehow Pichit is the one in the wrong here. "Now, it's fine. You don't need to apologize." Yuri can hear Pichit shift slightly, hesitating. Do you want to talk about it?" Anxiety jolts through Yuri's body, and he barely manages to choke out a, "No!" "Okay." Pichit rushes to placate him. "We don't need to." "Thanks," Yuri mumbles. His hand hurts. A friction burn, he thinks, from rubbing it against his knee too hard. And he winces. "Give me a minute and then I'll go back to practice." They don't talk about it again. Pichit treats him as he always has. He does not fuss or hover or treat him like he might break in a stiff breeze. He makes Yuri a new playlist, seamlessly transitioning from techno to a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, and asks Yuri if he has any recommendations in return. Yuri stammers some excuses, unable to think of anything in his music library that isn't intensely embarrassing. Pichit tries to teach him how to take the perfect selfie, but it just devolves into the two of them trying to take pictures from the strangest angles possible. Yuri trying to snap a picture one-handed while bent backward over a bridge, as Pichit alternates between spotting him and laughing so hard he can't breathe. "This is my friend Yuri," Pichit introduces him, and Yuri feels guilt well up fresh and bright. He can't stop his anxiety from overflowing occasionally, no matter how hard he tries, but he can stop himself from falling apart in front of Pichit. The least he can do to repay his friendship is keep his mess away from him. "Teach me how to say something in Japanese," Pichit says brightly, and Yuri shoots back without thinking, "Only if you teach me something in Thai." Pichit treats it like a game, and somehow that takes the pressure off of Yuri. There are no tests here, no one evaluating his ability to replicate a teacher's words and intonation. There are no grades, no points, no consequences if he fails, other than Pichit's laughter, but Pichit laughs twice as hard at his own mistakes. He does not get a gold star or a smiley face at the top of his paper when he succeeds, but he does get Pichit clapping his hands together in delight and exclaiming, "Okay, now teach me how to say that in Japanese." It feels nice to share bits and pieces of their native languages in a foreign land, to have a brief respite from the endless barrage of English, English, English. Pichit sings along to Thai pop at top volume as he cleans his hamster's cage, and Yuri shyly joins him on the chorus. It's only a few words repeated over and over, and he's listened to this song on Pichit's playlist enough times to feel somewhat confident that he's hearing them right. But Pichit beams at him anyway. The next week, Yuri finally gives in to Pichit's prodding and plays some truly embarrassing J-pop. The songs conjure up memories of secretly dancing with Mari in the banquet room when they were supposed to be doing chores, posing and giggling and pretending they were members of whichever idol group she was following at the moment. Pichit tries to puzzle out which parts of the song are in English, answer, many more of them than he thinks, and then pulls Yuri up to dance, the two of them trying to navigate the cramped space of the dorm room. It's nothing like dancing with Mari, much more coordinated despite the space constraints, but it leaves him grinning all the same. "This is my friend Yuri," Pichit manages to string together in mostly comprehensible Japanese. He uses ga instead of wa, but who's counting? And Yuri shoots back, "Okay, now teach me how to say that in Thai." Yuri comes home to Hasetsu. It's strange to return to being Yuri-kun and Katsuki-san and Toshiya-san's son, the skater, when he was only ever Yuri in Detroit. It's easier to navigate Hasetsu, to understand where he is supposed to fit, how he is supposed to relate to others. But it was easier to hide in Detroit, to shut the door to his room and keep the rest of the world out. Here, there are so many people he knows, so many people he doesn't know who nevertheless know him, so many people asking after him and cheering him on and invested in his future. If you're going to keep skating, I'll support you, but... Mari says. And Yuri doesn't know what to say to her. She's known him long and well enough to see through any attempt at deflection or misdirection. The Nishigori family's always got your back, Nishigori tells him, and Yuri appreciates the support, but he needs to figure out what he needs to keep skating on his own, and he can only do that, well, on his own. So he appreciates the support, really, he does. But sometimes he wishes he was back in Detroit, fighting on his own, without his hometown pressing in so close, to remind him of every way he's failed them. Victor bursts into Yuri's life, energetic and bright and very, very naked. If he sees the circle Yuri has drawn around himself, the impassable barrier he's created, he ignores it, hurling himself into Yuri's space as though it belongs to him. Yuri's family and Minako-sensei and the Nishigoris have learned to keep their distance, to give Yuri his space and his privacy, but Victor charges ahead, poking at Yuri's every vulnerability and prodding at his every insufficiency, so sure that Yuri is a diamond in the rough that just needs a little polishing. Hmm, Mighty teases. I guess he really does look like the posters, especially his... Mighty! Yuri hisses, frantically glancing at Victor, who is smiling at Yuri with that expectant look he's come to fear. What? He can't understand Japanese. Don't! Yuri! Victor pouts, an honest-to-God pout, and it's ridiculous and childish, and he should not look anywhere near as good as he does. What are you talking about? Nothing, Yuri says at the same time that Mari says, you. And Yuri tries not to screech as Mari cackles, quickly exiting the room. Yuri! Victor reaches for Yuri, but Yuri flinches backward. Victor's smile wavers almost imperceptibly, and he lets his hand drop. I guess I'll just have to learn Japanese, he says brightly. Please don't, Yuri moans, face buried in his hands. If Victor learns Japanese, that'll be one less barrier between them, one less way to keep distance between them. Yuri's afraid of what will happen if Victor gets too close, if he sees Yuri as he really is, in all his insufficiency. But every time Yuri pushes him away, Victor comes back. Boundless enthusiasm and absolute certainty, perfection incarnate. Victor is Victor, is always just Victor, never Coach Victor or Victor-san, or, heaven forbid, Nikiforov-san. Don't you think that calling him that is too familiar? Yuri asks, after Mari mentions that Victor, no honorific, has gone out drinking with Minako-sensei again. Mari stares at him blankly. You call him Victor. We speak English. It's different in English, Yuri protests. Mari snorts. You've always called him Victor. She pitches her voice upward, hands on her cheeks in a wide-eyed mockery. Did you see Victor's backflip? Victor is so cool, right? Mom, 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 can I get this picture of Victor? There are no backflips in figure skating, Yuri retorts, blushing furiously. He doesn't know how to explain that Victor never needed an honorific for all those years. In the same way, historical figures and fictional heroes don't need honorifics. Nobody talks about Hideyoshi-san or Harry Potter-san. Victor was a god, unreachable by a mere mortal like Yuri, so honorifics seemed unnecessary. Now that Victor is here, has miraculously deigned to descend to the same plane as Yuri, it's hard to break the habit. Leaving off the honorific made Victor untouchable before. But now it's too familiar, tricks Yudi into feeling an artificial closeness when they couldn't be farther apart. Well, his last name is too hard to pronounce, Maddie says decisively, as though she hasn't taught herself harder foreign names, suffered through Schwarzenegger and Connery without batting an eye. Yudi's mother keeps calling Victor Rui-chan, and that's even more embarrassing. But Yudi doesn't bother to correct her. He doesn't want to deal with her knowing smile and her warm reassurances that Victor doesn't mind in the slightest. He probably doesn't, but also he doesn't understand what it means. But Yudi would rather hurl himself into the sun than have that conversation. It's a few days before Onsen on Ice, and Nishigori is helping Yudi stretch, hands solid against his back and keeping him from straightening up even as his calves protest. Yuko's off helping Yurio with something. Yudi realizes he wasn't really paying attention, too caught up in replaying Victor's feedback in his mind, scrutinizing every frown and considering look for the first indication that he's tiring of Yudi, that he's realized how limited Yudi's capacity really is, and has decided to return to Russia. Nishigori volunteered to stay behind and help Yudi stretch, and a thought occurs to Yudi, so painfully obvious, that he doesn't know why he didn't think of it before. You don't have to help me. What? Nishigori's hands don't waver, still providing resistance as Yudi tries to reach his head to his knees, contort his body into shapes it was not built to make. You shouldn't feel obligated to help me, Yudi says, trying to speak loudly enough that his voice isn't muffled by his position. I know you're busy. Nishigori lifts his hands from Yudi's back so Yudi can straighten up. I'm not doing this because I have to. Oh. Yudi tries to think of a reason other than obligation that Nishigori would take time out of his day to help him. Yuko has been helping Yurio, in part because her English is good enough that he can communicate more easily with her than most of the other people in Hasets. Could Nishigori be trying to level the playing field? Maybe Yudi's internal monologue shows on his face because Nishigori says, like I said, the Nishigori family's always got your back. Thank you. It's an automatic response, mostly reflex, but still sincere. Nishigori nods and gestures for Yudi to spread his legs into a straddle so he can practice his middle splits. It's when Yudi's nearly got his nose to the floor, Nishigori applying enough pressure to keep him from springing back up, but not enough to force him into stretching more than is comfortable, that Yudi finds the words to try again. It's just that I don't want to impose, so... Nishigori scoffs, more amused than irritated, or so Yudi hopes. I just don't. Yudi's voice comes out much quieter than he intended, small and wavering. If I don't win... Yudi, Nishigori says, and he lifts his hands so Yudi can straighten up slowly. Don't think that we're doing this because we're expecting you to win. We'd like you to win, yes, but win or lose, we've all got your back, okay? Okay, Yudi says carefully, and Nishigori slaps him on the back a bit too vigorously. Once Nishigori has pointed it out, Yudi can't stop seeing it. Maybe it's because both Victor and Yudi are visiting, making visible things that Yudi has always taken for granted. Or maybe it's because Yudi's back home after 5 years away, and everyone is crowding close to make up for lost time. Maddie cleans out the storage room for Yudio with minimal complaint, and their mother welcomes Yudio and Victor like long-lost family members, albeit one she can't communicate with at all. Yudi keeps walking in on his mother, trying to cheerfully point and gesture her way through communications with Victor, who nearly pokes his eye out gesturing back, and Yudio, who grumbles about just about everything but still somehow learns how to say thank you in Japanese. What? He spits, when Yudi doesn't quite manage to hide a smile fast enough. Minako-sensei offers both him and Yudio studio space, and lets Victor drag her around town to interpret for him when Yuri's too tired after practice. "I don't mind," she says, when Yuri apologizes for the imposition, and then invites him to join them next time. Yuri manages to successfully duck that invitation. He can't imagine anything more potentially excruciating than spending an evening with Victor at an izakaya. Who knows what he might say or do with lowered inhibitions? The triplets may be terrible skating otaku, but they're also a veritable Greek chorus of support, flitting between the three skaters to cheer them on, and probably to take secret pictures and post them on the internet, but still, maybe it's the thought that counts in this case? "Ganba, Yuri!" they yell from the sidelines, camcorder at the ready. Yurio mutters something about not being so pathetic as to need a bunch of kids to cheer for him, but he still looks pleased when they shout, "Ganba, Yuri!" as he takes the ice. Yuri's always been fighting on his own, except now he isn't. He has what feels like the entire town of Hasets rallying around him, offering a hand and tracking his progress. He's always felt the weight of their expectations keenly, but now that weight is tempered with their love for him, expressed through the way they welcome Victor with open arms, the way they tolerate Yurio's fits of teenage temper. It's the way Minako-sensei opens her door to him in the middle of the night, the way Mari suddenly needs him to help with a very repetitive and mind-numbing chore right when his anxiety starts ramping up, the way Nishigori puts him in some kind of joyful headlock when he manages to beat his previous time running up the stairs. He's not the sole focus of their attention, and that makes it easier somehow, makes the scrutiny more bearable. He doesn't know what to call the feeling he has for all of them. The intense gratitude and affection, with surprisingly minimal guilt. But he decides to call it love. Yuri catches Victor puzzling over doubled consonants with Mari. She only laughs a little bit when he trips over his own tongue and skips glottal stops. It's strange for Yuri to see Victor being anything less than polished, anything less than perfection embodied. It's uncomfortable to see him tripped up by simple phrases, confused by particles and conjugations, making mistake after mistake, without ever stuttering or shrinking into himself. Victor's Japanese is, frankly, awful. But Victor speaks with the self-confidence of someone who is absolutely certain that he's going to screw up, but powers through it anyway. "Wow, that's embarrassing," Victor responds brightly. When Mari points out that Gintama is an anime and Kintama is, well, something else entirely. But nothing slows Victor down. No mistake dulls his enthusiasm, and no humiliation makes him retreat. Yuri keeps catching Victor practicing Japanese when he thinks Yuri isn't paying attention, soaking up vocabulary from the triplets, and nodding along to grammar corrections from Yuko, and, for some inexplicable reason, paying rapt attention to Sagaben lessons from Mari. Why on earth would Victor want to speak Sagaben? Yuri doesn't want to speak Sagaben, and he doesn't have the added difficulty of a non-native language, of a tongue that has not yet learned how to properly shape words. Yuri is so surprised the first time he hears Victor make a mistake in English that his feet nearly go out from under him. "Yuri, are you all right?" Victor calls worriedly. "Do you need to take a break?" Yuri brushes him off, says he just lost his footing, which, of course, backfires horribly, since Victor spends the rest of the afternoon worrying aloud that Yuri has forgotten how to skate in a straight line. Once he's heard one mistake, he starts to hear more. Mispronunciations and eggcorns, conflicting tenses and double negatives. It makes Victor sound human. It tricks Yuri into thinking that they have some common ground, struggling to string words together in a vaguely coherent fashion in a non-native language. He hates it, and he loves it, and he can't stop hearing it, no matter how hard he tries. "I've been missing Detroit," Petite tells him, yawning widely as he treks across his apartment to feed his hamsters. He keeps lowering his arm without thinking, leaving Yuri with a view of his face from the nose down. But Yuri doesn't want to bother him when he's focused on something else. "Detroit?" Yuri asks idly. He's just got home from training and is sitting in bone-deep exhaustion, not quite able to summon the energy to stand up and walk downstairs to eat dinner. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to be back in Bangkok, but sometimes I'm still... He trails off, uncharacteristically pensive. I miss Detroit too, Yudi admits. I don't even know why. It must be for the delicious cuisine, Petit teases. The malls, Yudi proclaims dramatically. Truly, what could ever live up to an American mall? They both laugh, but then Petit's smile wavers into something a bit more serious. I do mean it, though. Detroit wasn't the same once you were gone. Hasset's isn't the same without you, Yudi says, because it's true. He'd gotten used to having Petit by his side, training and studying and laughing and living life to the fullest. But you have Victor, Petit says, and he has that gleam in his eye that spells trouble. Yes, but Victor isn't you, Yudi replies, hoping to shut down that line of questioning. Wow, Yudi, I'm honored. Petit presses a hand over his heart, but he still has that smile that says Yudi's distraction failed. You should come visit me in Bangkok sometime. Bring Victor with you. Yudi glances towards his bedroom door, even though he's got headphones in, so Victor wouldn't be able to hear Petit even if he happened to be hovering right outside. I don't think that's a good idea. It sounds like a great idea to me, Petit insists. He obviously likes traveling. Have you seen his social media? I could show you the sights and interpret, and I know where all the best food is. No, I mean, I don't. We don't have that kind of relationship. Oh ho ho. Yudi immediately knows that he's misstepped. What kind of relationship do you have, then? Yudi can feel himself blushing furiously. Petit knows about his long-standing crush on Victor. Probably most of the universe knows about it now, knowing Yudi's luck. But it's still embarrassing to think about the way his coach pushes himself into Yudi's space and tells him that he's beautiful and desirable, almost like he really means it. Like it's not some kind of ploy to make him perform Eros better. He's my coach? Uh-huh, Petit says. But it does not sound like agreement. Victor uploads an awful lot of pictures of you, and those hashtags don't quite scream coach-student relationship. Despite having been friends with Petit for years, Yudi has only the vaguest sense of how hashtags work, and has spent much longer panicking over how spectacularly unphotogenic he is than the words Victor has paired with his uploads. I'm... Just ask him, Petit suggests with an exaggerated wink. I think he'll say yes. Should I be calling you Yudi-san? Victor asks out of the blue one day. He looks less certain than usual, somehow, even though he sounds casual. Yudi wonders if someone pulled him aside or if he came to the realization on his own. He thinks of honorifics and levels of formality, of remolding the ill-defined space Victor occupies, turning it into something easier to pin down and comprehend. He doesn't want that. It's a strange realization. He'd rather have Victor, no honorific, in this strange, ambiguous space than Victoru-kun or Victoru-san or Victoru-senpai. He would rather keep tricking himself into feeling an artificial closeness, would rather leave room for Victor to keep standing in Yudi's space as though it belongs to him. No, Yudi replies, before he can second-guess himself. Just Yudi is fine. Victor smiles. 1,000,000 kilowatts. 1,000,000,000,000 kilowatts. Enough kilowatts to light the entirety of Japan for the rest of Yudi's natural life. Okay. Just Victor is fine for me, too. Photo? One of the younger skaters. Yudi should know his name. He knows he should know, but it's been knocked from his head by the combination of adrenaline and blunt force trauma, asks in English, and Yudi is already holding out his hand when he hands his smartphone to Victor instead. On three, Victor calls as the skater, What is his name? What is his name? Yuri knows he should know his name. Positions himself beside Yuri, beaming.
Yuri's sure that the first few pictures will be completely unusable, because it takes a moment for him to school his expression into something other than shock and vague unease.
Did you want a picture with Victor? Yuri asks. And the skater? Suzuki? Yamashita? Some common family name, he's fairly certain. Waves off the offer as he politely takes his phone back, and then stammers a couple of sentences in very formal Japanese about how much he's looking forward to seeing Yuri compete in the Grand Prix before he scurries away. Yuri, Victor says, draping himself over Yuri. You have to get better at dealing with your fans. And Yuri can only nod in shocked silence. You can clap, Yuri tells Victor, when he catches him struggling yet again with the differences between mate and matte. One clap per mora. He demonstrates, hands in front of him and words intentionally slow. Ma-te. Ma-te. Victor's eyes go wide, and he mimics Yuri immediately, hands and mouth moving out of sync on his first try, but together on his second. Amazing, he declares. As though Yuri has taught him the secrets of the universe, instead of a simple trick he picked up from his language partner. Thank you, Yuri, he says, and Yuri can't tamp down the flash of pride, the sliver of warmth that breaks through the writhing mass of anxiety for the briefest moment. It doesn't last, of course. Yuri sees the warning signs, knows intimately the creeping dread that takes his lungs hostage and sends his legs jittering. He can't stop thinking about failure, about wiping out, about his body betraying him, a compilation of his every mistake. From falling the first time he stepped onto the ice to his less-than-stellar toe flip at his last practice. Spliced together in an endless loop in his brain. I'm going to fall. I'm going to fall. I'm going to fall. I'm going to... It's worse now that Victor's here. Now that he can imagine just how disappointed Victor will look when Yuri falls. How embarrassed he'll be when the press starts raking him over the coals for throwing away his career to coach a dime a dozen, third tier, fourth tier, if he's being honest. So low in the tiers that numbering them doesn't even make sense. Skater. Actually, maybe Victor won't be embarrassed. He never seems to be embarrassed by anything, but that's almost worse. It was easier when Yuri's failure was his alone, when he didn't let anyone into his space to share in his failures and triumphs, but mostly failures, if he's honest. No one expects anything from Katsuki Yuri, but the world expects so much from Viktor Nikiforov and from Yuri as an extension of Viktor. But Yuri is not Viktor, and Yuri will never be able to meet their expectations. Victor says Yuri is a diamond in the rough, but really, he's just an ordinary rock that Victor has wasted his time on. It's been years since he last melted down in front of another person, and this time is no better than the last. It seems like Victor is doing everything wrong, everything he possibly can to make it worse. And Yuri's shouting him down before he can second-guess himself, too much of his energy focused on staying upright, and not dissolving into a hyperventilating puddle for him to pull his punches and filter his words. Victor looks uneasy and off balance and terribly, terribly human. He has no idea what he's doing, Yuri realizes, as his vision swims and his chest constricts, and somehow that realization is simultaneously comforting and terrifying. Yuri's been expecting Victor to be perfect, but Victor is no more perfect than Yuri. He's a better skater, more charismatic, more comfortable with an audience. But still, they're both just fumbling along, Victor throwing words at things until eventually something sticks, while Yuri inspects and weighs every utterance, holding each so tightly, afraid that they might escape at the wrong time, that they dig into his skin. Maybe Victor just sounds more fluent because he's more self-confident. Yuri thinks through the haze of adrenaline and exhaustion and nerves as Victor leads him back to the rink, expression tight. Wow, Yuri, you have so many friends, Victor says, when Yuri finally manages to extricate himself after descending from the podium in Beijing. There was the podium selfie, of course, taken by Petit, and then more selfies with Petit and Leo and Guanghong, and then Chris wanted to join in, of course. And before Yuri knew it, he was being roped into dozens of pictures, arms around his neck, arms around his waist, pulled snugly against the other sides as they stretched their arms as far as they could reach, Petit having forgotten his selfie stick in the hotel room. What? Yuri can feel himself crashing, the adrenaline and podium high finally wearing off. His eyeballs feel gummy, and his chest feels hollowed out, the squirming mass of anxiety momentarily gone, along with most of his energy, and God, he just wants to lie down and not get up for maybe another 50 years. Takeshi and Yuko said you weren't very good at making friends. Victor beams at Yuri, looking proud. Why should he be proud? Yuri chalks it up to sleep deprivation playing tricks on his eyes. But you're so popular. I guess I'll have to work hard to get any time with you. He winks. Yuri can feel himself blushing, but still he repeats. What? Have you confused me with you? Victor's smile dims slightly. What? I'm not popular, Yuri mumbles. You're the popular one. You're the one with fans. Victor is frowning at him now, and Yuri wishes he would stop, wishes they could just end this conversation and go back to the hotel room and sleep. Yuri, he says sternly, there's Petit. He was my rinkmate in Detroit, Yuri explains. And Leo and Guanghong. I know them through Petit. They're really his friends. And Chris? I barely know Chris. Victor's frown deepens at that. Yuri. It's that disappointed look again, the one he leveled at Yuri in Okayama. And Yuri wants to take everything back, turn back the clock until they're lying on the ice again, and Victor's proud of him instead of upset. Do you not like them? No, Yuri insists. I don't think we're that close. Victor stares at him for a long moment, and Yuri tries not to squirm under his gaze. But then Victor just says, okay, and then ushers him back to the hotel. That evening, Victor gushes over the podium selfie Petit posts. I'd like this 1,000 times if I could. But Yuri gets caught on the caption. Sharing the podium with my hashtag best friend, hashtag Katsuki Yuri. And then a string of hashtags and emojis Yuri only half understands, but he sure have some deeper meaning he's missing. Yuri doesn't have long to puzzle over it, as Victor demands his attention with a plaintive, Yuri, I want to kiss you. Come here. But over the next week, he keeps turning best friend over and over in his mind, the words blindingly bright, no matter what angle he views them from. Victor was asking about you, Mari says, apropos of nothing, as they stand shoulder to shoulder washing dishes, Mari rinsing while Yuri dries. He wanted to know about the anxiety. Yuri feels it begin to crawl up his throat, seizing control of his vocal cords. He knew that something bad was going to come out of this. He knew that it would be too much for Victor to handle, for anyone to handle. He wanted to know how he could help, Mari explains quickly, as though she's already caught on to Yuri's train of thought. But she doesn't look up from the bowl she's rinsing, all her attention focused on the task at hand. Yuri's anxiety grinds to a halt at the sudden dead end. I told him that he should ask you. She hands him the bowl and he takes it automatically, lifting the towel to dry it before he has the chance to think. I told him that I don't want to talk behind your back. You can, Yuri blurts out. You can talk to him about it if you want. He doesn't know how to explain that he'd rather not talk about it. If Mari can have all the hard conversations for him, so much the better. Mari's already rinsing another plate, movements quick and efficient. All right. Thanks, says Yuri quietly. You should still talk to him, Mari says, as though that's easy. Just a question of coaxing his body and voice into a simple exchange of words. I'll think about it, Yuri hedges, and Mari rolls her eyes. Victor called me Nei-san while you were gone, Mari says, after Victor has finally been shooed toward bed. He was nodding off at the dinner table, exhausted from several days of worrying over Makkachin and Yuri, and probably would have just fallen asleep on the floor again if Mari hadn't insisted. The apologies start tumbling from Yuri's mouth in an anxious waterfall before she can even finish the sentence. She waves him off. It's fine, I don't mind. I'll talk to him, Yuri insists, face burning and stomach squirming with embarrassment. He probably heard me saying it, and he doesn't know what it means.
He knows. She sounds amused, which helps ease Yuri's anxiety a little bit. I think he just said it accidentally because he was tired.
Yes, but Yuri, I said it's fine. Yuri swallows down his apologies at Mari's tone. He ducks his head, hands twisting in his lap as he tries to figure out how to broach the topic of appropriate formality levels with his coach. Will Victor even understand or care that he's being overly familiar? He's been draping himself all over Yuri since they met, so there's a chance he'll just laugh off Yuri's correction. He was really worried about you, you know, Mari says in that careful tone that she uses when she's trying to figure out what he's thinking but isn't willing to ask. Sorry, Yuri mumbles. Why are you apologizing? If I were a better skater, he wouldn't have to worry. Yuri hates how small and wavering his voice sounds, like he's got a bad head cold or is about to cry. Yuri, Mari says, exasperated and fond, and every inch a big sister. He wasn't worrying about your skating. Sorry. Yuri doesn't know what else to say. His mind keeps shying away from the implication of Mari's words. The idea that Victor might be worried about him is somehow even more anxiety-provoking than the idea that Victor is worried about Yuri embarrassing them both by wiping out. Yuri can understand his family worrying about him. They're his family. And the Nishikori family worrying about him. The triplets are total skating otaku, and he's known Yuko and Takeshi since childhood. Hasetsu doesn't produce many people with national, let alone international, recognition. So of course the people of the town would worry about him. But Victor? Victor is his coach. His coach who he is more or less dating, but that's surely just a short-term thing. They haven't talked about it, because Yuri isn't willing to have that conversation unless he can do it perfectly. But surely, surely. Anyway, Mari stands in a single fluid motion, smoothing her apron flat as she tries to hide a smirk. I told him he can call me Nei-san if he wants. He does, repeatedly. If Yuri didn't know better, he would think that Victor and Mari are in league to give him a heart attack. Then he catches the two of them whispering over something conspiratorially, and later that week, when an old man stops Yuri on the street to ask if he's that skater whose posters are all over the train station, Victor introduces himself proudly in accented but surprisingly intelligible Japanese as Yuri's coach and lover. Yuri revises his earlier assessment. They are definitely in league and are definitely going to give him a heart attack. It takes Yuri a full 3 days to figure out the circuitous path that led Minami-kun being invited to Hasetsu to watch the Grand Prix final. It involves the triplets being overactive on social media, Minako-sensei having taught Minami's coach once upon a time, and the Nishigori family offering him a place to stay. Even knowing that, he's still not quite sure how they got from point A to point B. The point, though, is that somehow Minami-kun has been invited to Hasetsu to watch the Grand Prix final. More baffling than that, everyone around him seems to be treating this as a totally normal state of affairs. He sounds like a nice boy, his mother says when he brings it up, which is not the point. I hope he likes Hasets.
Oh, the one with the hair? Maddie asks, but then is interrupted by Victor and Makkatin bounding through the door and demanding everyone's attention.
I've told the girls, no pictures without permission, Yuko tells them. So don't worry. And Yuri can't find the words to explain that that's not what he's worried about. I can't believe they have video, Yuri moans, face planted on the table, while Petite pats his arm comfortingly with one hand and eats with the other. Victor disappeared off somewhere while Yuri was asleep, but Petite swooped in to drag him to breakfast before Yuri could start worrying too much about what Victor's absence might mean. See? I told you those pole dancing lessons would come in handy, Petite says in what he probably thinks is a comforting tone. Yuri raises his head from the table, and Petite is grinning. So, then again, maybe he's not trying to be comforting. Yuri lets his head fall back to the table with an audible thunk. Petite, please. Yuri, please, Petite mimics back. You seduced your crush with a pole dance. He literally flew across an ocean for you. You're engaged. Please. I'm just saying. I don't understand, Yuri says, and he's trying not to whine, but he's not sure how successful he is. I embarrassed myself in front of everyone, and... Yuri. Petite interrupts him, somehow managing to get a finger to Yuri's lips to shush him, despite Yuri's face still being plastered on the table. I love you, but you do this thing where you assume that nobody likes you, even though they do? I don't, Yuri mumbles, trying to sink into the table, and Petite shushes him again. Victor loves you. Petite ticks each point off on his fingers. I haven't been competing as long as you, but everyone keeps talking about how happy he looks now. You're my best friend. Chris likes you, and not just because you pole danced with him mostly naked, although that probably didn't hurt. Yuri Plisetsky puts on a tough act, but come on, look at him. Sara was just telling me the other day that she wishes she knew you better. Leo, stop! Yuri can feel his face burning. No, Petite says, with a sort of joyful viciousness. Leo says that you... Stop! Yuri, Yuri, Yuri. Petite pats his cheek. Face it, everyone loves you. But I'm not! The words come out strangled, and Yuri takes a deep breath, willing his voice not to break. I don't do anything. Petite tisks. Remember when I was really homesick and you took me out to karaoke? No, Yuri says truthfully. He can't ever remember Petite being homesick. Petite is bright and energetic and never, ever dimmed by anxiety or sadness. Remember when I got really nervous about doing the bank stuff in English and you went with me and helped me when I got stuck? Yuri has a vague memory of talking to bank tellers, more concerned that he wasn't intelligible than by Petite's uncharacteristic silence. Maybe? You do this thing, Petite says patiently, where you think you matter less to everyone than you actually do. 1,000 objections fill Yuri's head, but he holds them all back. He knows Petite is inflating Yuri's importance, but he also knows that Petite is very, very stubborn. Let's find your fiancé after breakfast. Petite nudges Yuri's mostly untouched plate toward him. I need to get a picture with both of you and your engagement rings. Good job, Yuri says, and he feels stupid the moment the words leave his mouth. You did a good job. JJ looks surprised, unbalanced for a moment, a champagne glass in one hand and an arm around his fiancée. But then he recovers and flashes that trademark smile. Thank you. I know it's... The words dry up in his mouth in the wake of JJ's smile. He isn't good at this. He isn't good at words in general, let alone in English. JJ is smiling at him uncomprehendingly, and Yuri doesn't want to do this. Yuri feels a hand on the small of his back, Victor sliding comfortably into the space behind him. "All right?" he asks in Japanese, and Yuri lets himself lean into his touch. "I get anxious too," he says to JJ, not looking at Victor. His voice is steady, maybe higher than usual, but not shaking or breaking under pressure. He can control it, force his mouth to make shapes that feel unnatural to his non-native tongue. It's hard to... Skating is hard when you're... He's floundering, he knows, probably not terribly coherent, but he needs to say it, needs JJ to hear it. He practiced this in his head, he swears he did, even if it's coming out all wrong. "That was brave, what you did. Skating anyway." "Oh," JJ says, and his practiced smile slips away. Yuri forgets sometimes that, despite his height and charisma and confidence, he's actually younger than Petit. "Thank you." "Petit was looking for you," Victor murmurs in his ear, pressing himself closer than strictly necessary. But Yuri lets himself be led away, nodding awkwardly to JJ, but silently relieved that he doesn't have to continue that conversation. By the end of the banquet, Petit and Victor have managed to organize the second annual GPF dance-off. Yuri gets strong-armed into participating only because Petit promises that there will be no nudity this time, despite Victor's objections. There is no winner, since Victor is ruled to be inherently biased. "He's married to you, for fuck's sake," Yuri snarls, and Victor corrects him that they're not married yet. And none of the other coaches are willing to judge. Yuri has been tagged in what feels like 1,000 posts. He turns off his phone after the first dozen, since he can feel his anxiety climbing from the attention. Victor and Petit figure out that they have a shared knowledge of Japanese and spend at least 10 minutes trying to out-compliment Yuri in his native language. "I love Yuri's face," Victor offers very seriously, while Petit counters, "I love Yuri's shirt." Yuri is fairly sure that both of them are cheating and looking up words on the internet, since they keep covertly checking their phones. Chris invites Yuri to dance. Yuri isn't sure why he's so surprised that Chris is as good at partner dancing as he is at pole dancing, but he is. And then Victor cuts in. When Chris cuts in to dance with Victor, Petit drags Yuri back onto the dance floor, the two of them taking turns twirling each other with increasingly elaborate flourishes. "Yuri." Victor drapes himself over Yuri's shoulders, a couple of drinks in, but, thankfully, not any more naked than he started the evening. "How do you say fiancé in Japanese? This is important, Yuri. Teach me how to say it." "Only if you teach me how to say it in Russian," Yuri shoots back without thinking. Victor smiles. A million kilowatts. A trillion kilowatts. Yuri could honestly never quantify how brilliant and terrifying being caught in the blast of Victor Nikiforov's smile is. And kisses him in front of everyone. "Victor!" "Yuri," he replies, unrepentant. And from the corner of his eye, Yuri sees Petit not very subtly snap a picture. The end.
Author's notes.
So I wrote about all the fun language learning stuff for Victor, which means Yuri gets all the horrible, anxiety-inducing language learning stuff. Sorry, Yuri. The genesis of this fic was watching the early episodes with a friend and Takeshi saying that Yuri has never been good at making friends and me going, "Wait, what?" Also thinking about relationality and wanting more fic with Petit and crying about skater friends forever. Then I started writing and then just kept writing for literal months. Why do you do this, Queenie? Also, I'm a couple of hours late for Petit's birthday, but it's still his birthday somewhere, so let's pretend. Happy birthday, Petit! Title comes from Pluto by Sleeping at Last, which is an intensely Yuri song. Time for more notes than you care to read. Bam! Kago can be broken into two broad categories. Honorific speech, for speaking respectfully to people of higher status and or people in an outgroup. And humble speech, for speaking humbly about yourself and or people in your in-group to people in an out-group. While it's the bane of non-native speakers everywhere, folks in the younger generation of native speakers are also much less likely to be proficient. There are Kago training programs and boot camps for this reason. The big exception is kids coming from families who own their own businesses, like Yuri. Delimiting the boundaries of friend. Friend in Japanese tends to be used less broadly than in English, at least in the circles I run in. You're much more likely to refer to someone by their relation to you. My coworker, my senpai, an acquaintance. Shirai is a great word, etc. Then as a generic friend. Of course, Yuri magnifies that difference, because anxiety screws with perceptions of yourself and your relationships. Thumbs up. Sound different in different languages. Your voice does literally sound different in different languages. Generally speaking, women tend to speak Japanese at a higher pitch than English. It's part of the reason anime girls may sound okay in Japanese, but horrifyingly grating if they're speaking at the same pitch in English dubs. And men speak Japanese at a slightly lower pitch than English. Ga versus wa, subject versus topic marker. I could write like 6 paragraphs about this, but if you've ever learned Japanese as a second language, you already know what I'm talking about, and if you haven't, you probably don't want to know. Suffice it to say, this is an incredibly common mistake. Gintama versus Kintama. Listen, if you speak a second language, you have at least one, probably more like 15, extremely embarrassing story. This one is, fortunately, not mine. Kintama means testicles. So if you, like my classmate, ask your host brother if he's ever seen Kintama. Clapping out mora. In Japanese, a syllable equivalent is called a mora. One of the ways beginning speakers are taught to pace their words correctly is by clapping out mora. One clap for one mora. This is useful for practicing small tsu or doubled consonants. Kite is 2 mora, for example, but kite is 3. The second mora is similar to a glottal stop. Ne-san. I suspect this is one a lot of people already know, even if they don't speak Japanese, but it's a more familiar form of big sister. Yuri pretty consistently calls Mari, Mari ne-san, which is like big sister Mari. It's not unusual to call non-relative young women o-ne-san, the more polite form, in the same way you might call someone young lady in English. Fluency. I present one of my favorite quotations on fluency for your consideration. When I was beginning to discover languages, I had a romanticized view of words like speak and fluency. But then I realized that you can be nominally fluent in a language and still struggle to understand parts of it. English is my first language, but what I really spoke was a hybrid of teenage slang and Manhattanese. When I listened to my father, a lawyer, talk to other lawyers, his words sound as foreign to me as Finnish. I certainly couldn't read Shakespeare without a dictionary, and I'd be equally helpless in a room with Jamaicans or Cajuns. Yet all of us speak English. My linguistics teacher, a native of Poland, speaks better English than I do and seems right at home peppering his speech with terms like epenthetic schwa and voiceless alveolar stops. Yet the other day, it came up that he'd never heard the word tethered. Does that mean he doesn't speak English? If the standard of speaking a language is to know every word, to feel equally at home debating nuclear fission and classical music, and then hardly anyone is fluent in their own native tongues. Tim Doner. Reader's notes. I have no comments for this one, sorry. Except that scene where Petit calls Yuri his best friend. And Yuri's like, wait, I have a best friend.
That broke my heart a little bit. Oh, poor, poor Yudi. I just want to hug him so much. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye.